I'm Melissa Bowman for CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup. We will do a fairly thorough tour of the region in this episode. We'll start off in Wilmot Township with an update about a proposed residential development in New Hamburg. Then we'll hear from Kitchener Council about some recent decisions on housing. Sticking with housing, I'll share an update on the proposed development at 555 Beechwood Drive that was discussed at Regional Council recently. And lastly, there are some new details about the diversity, equity, and inclusion work happening in Waterloo. So let's start with Wilmot Council. Wilmot Council is now getting in on some of the housing discussions happening around how to intensify well and also attempt to address housing affordability concerns. Council discussed the plan for Hink Street, proposed by Caden Keller Homes Incorporated. This plan requires several variances involving the removal of a single-family home, which would be replaced by a four-unit dwelling. The developers also have proposed a future severance of nearby land, allowing for up to two more homes in that space, totaling a possible six homes over those two lots. One of the consultants for the developer, Samuel Head, says the variances being requested are permitted within the township zoning bylaw and are in line with regional and provincial policy. However, several delegations spoke against this proposal with concerns that this new development would destroy the community's small town feel. One delegation, Sari Nelms, lives on a corner lot near the proposed development. She says that she wants to feel safe, and her safety is now at risk because of this development. She feels like the voices of residents are not being heard and states, "We want to feel like we matter." Delegate Craig Nichols feels angry and upset about the zone change application and the impact it could have on his pool, property, and family. He's worried about windows of the proposed property that will be in arm's length from the pool and says, "I have three teenage daughters here." Dan Fleischman is next to speak. He moved to New Hamburg from Kitchener 7 years ago. He says the neighbors are amazing. He believes that building six residences in this location is not appropriate. Several delegations asked councillors to consider how they would vote if they lived next door to this proposal. Councillor Jennifer Fenning responds,
"I hear the anger, I hear the frustration, and I hear the challenge that residents are feeling. The request was that we vote as if this was our neighborhood, as if we were living next door. To me, I intend to vote in favor of this. I moved the motion. The reason is because I am voting as if it were next door to me. I am voting as if that space next door to me could potentially hold a house that my children might be able to afford so that they can live in this community with me. I want to have a community that cares about providing homes for people who can't afford the increase in property values. I want to see our next generation, when they reach their 20s and they want to move out, they're going to need a home that they can afford. Developments like this create those spaces. So I am voting in favor of this because I'm voting as if it was next door to me."
Councillor Angie Hallman is also supportive of this proposal since intensification reduces the pressure for urban sprawl.
"So I very much am in support of intensification in our settlement areas so that our farmers can continue to feed the cities, so that families can continue to thrive generation after generation. And as we know in Waterloo Region, we have a housing crisis. We are running out of places for people to live. We have seniors looking to downsize so that far larger families, as Councillor Fanning had mentioned, people who are looking to enter that phase of life to raise their own families. So I'm in absolute support of this application this evening."
And Council votes in support of this development proposal. Moving to Kitchener now, where Dune area seemed to be the focus of several discussions. Council voted in favor of three traffic calming measures to be implemented in the Deer Ridge neighborhood. One delegation spoke against these traffic calming measures with concerns about emergency medical vehicles accessing the neighborhood promptly when needed. He suggested that if speed bumps were installed, that could add approximately 10 seconds of delay to the average response time to the neighborhood, resulting in, as he said, the possibility of 16 deaths in the neighborhood. Staff shared that there should not be any delays as they are not using speed bumps, but rather speed cushions that do not slow emergency vehicles the way speed bumps can. There was also much discussion about a proposed garage to be built in Dune. City staff had originally denied this application with concerns about protecting the property's heritage value and that the garage may negatively impact views of the nearby Grand River. This area is also very near to the Pioneer Tower Historic Site. Ward 3 Councillor John Gazzola praised the property owners for their care and maintenance of the heritage property, which is the original 1800s homestead of one of the region's first pioneer families. Council approved the building of the garage. And let's stay with the Dune area as we move on to the next issue discussed at Council. Council recently received a consultant's report with over 20 recommendations regarding housing, heritage, and development in the Lower Dune area near Conestoga College. The report outlined concerns such as rental units being unsafe for students, poor maintenance of rental homes used as student housing, and landlords threatening students who complain about their living conditions. Two delegations spoke to the Lower Dune report. First was Martin Asling, co-founder of WR YIMBY, or Waterloo Region Yes in My Backyard, an organization that encourages action on housing access and affordability through addressing issues around housing supply, stability, and subsidy. Mr. Asling highlighted some of the recommendations he sees as positive coming from this report. He references the minimum separation bylaw for lodging homes that currently exists in Kitchener, which states that any new lodging house cannot exist within 400 meters of an existing lodging house.
I welcome a lot of what's in the report. I think it's really important to have another explicit reference to the minimum separation distance for lodging houses and the fact that they are not viable, you know, moving forward. This is something that we need to be moving beyond on human rights grounds, on affordability grounds. I mentioned before the Ontario Human Rights Commission's opinion on minimum separation distance bylaw. So it was good to see that in externally commissioned report.
Mr. Asling also appreciates the study's recognition that lack of housing supply is exacerbating challenges in the Lower Dune area.
I think it was very important to address the importance of overall supply of housing in Lower Dune. When we're looking at the issue of student housing, or really any housing in Kitchener, particularly housing that doesn't always meet the needs of residents, it's important to contextualize that within the overall lack of affordable housing.
The delegate also speaks to the report's recommendation to have a lodging home licensing program throughout the city, including in the Lower Dune area, where currently lodging homes are not officially permitted, but do exist as the report outlines.
This will also provide an incentive for landlords to license their multi-tenant homes. I would also reiterate the importance of using licensing for tenant safety and tenant well-being needs with the accountability directed towards the landlords and not used as a means of limiting the number of students that can be housed through them.
Mr. Asling notes that he has heard concerns from neighbors about overcrowding, and he says that density and overcrowding are not the same thing, and that offering more housing options takes the pressure off of existing housing.
Now, I understand a lot of people are concerned with student overcrowding, and I'd like to emphasize that density and overcrowding are not necessarily the same thing. When you provide more housing for people, and that could mean more lodging homes, it could mean more apartment buildings, other types of housing, that takes the pressure off the students that do not have anywhere else to go, but other than to be together in the same building with 10 or more people in those kinds of situations.
He concludes that the people living in lodging homes must be centered in conversations and decisions about how to move the program forward, which leads well into the second delegation, Sana Banu, representing Conestoga Students Incorporated, or CSI. Ms. Banu was disappointed by the lack of intentional student engagement throughout this process.
My name is Sana Banu, and I'm the president of Conestoga Students, Inc. We are the official student association of Conestoga College, representing the voice of over 19,000 students. CSI has consistently advocated for and supported recommendations and proposals that focus on safe, affordable, and accessible housing. While we welcome many of the Lower Doon land use study recommendations put forward to increase the housing safety and supply, CSI has concerns about how these recommendations were created, specifically the lack of tenants' feedback, who are primarily students, obtained on an issue framed around their needs and experiences.
The delegate outlined some of the barriers students may face in engaging on these issues.
Many tenants in the Lower Doon area faced unique barriers preventing them from receiving notice of the consultations. These include difficulty in receiving personal notices or direct paper communication, to reprisal threats from landlords if they share their negative experiences. If the city of Kitchener were serious about considering the voice of these members of the community, CSI believes alternative methods of outreach could and should have been utilized far earlier in the consultation process to meet student tenants on their terms. Instead, this report heavily focused on opinions from only one side of the community, the Lower Doon homeowners.
Ms. Banu outlined some of the concerns raised by homeowners in the engagement process.
Their statements published in the report included comments such as, students retaliate against people who lodge complaints against them. Students have no pride of ownership. They don't care about the neighborhood. There's simply too many students. The neighborhood was originally built for families. It needs to go back to being a family neighborhood. Through the 16-month consultation period, there was no consultation with CSI. Had CSI been provided with the opportunity to bring the student voice to consultations, the recommendations would better reflect the current tenant housing landscape and available supports. CSI strives to create positive outcomes for both the existing and new members to the community, but have concerns there could be unforeseen negative consequences. For example, recommendations 13 through 15 must consider the short and long-term impacts on the supply of rental housing. Overall, this report's recommendations are a positive step forward to increase the available options for safe housing in the Lower Doon community, but not an overarching solution to address the root problems.
The delegation concluded with Ms. Banu once again encouraging more engagement with students on these issues from the city. Councillors generally agreed that more could be done to better engage as the discussions proceed. And the consultant's report on Lower Doon was passed. And just one more housing issue from Kitchener, which should be good news for 41 local women currently experiencing homelessness who will soon have their own home, as Kitchener Council approved a new supportive housing project in partnership with the YWCA. The homes will be built on Blockline Road and will hopefully be completed by the end of this year. Elizabeth Clark, Chief Executive Officer of the YWCA and Regional Councillor, said that there are currently about 100 women experiencing chronic homelessness in the region awaiting a place to live. Many of them currently reside in the YW's Kitchener shelter. This project is noteworthy for its approach as well. Kitchener will provide a 50-year lease of the city-owned land to the YWCA at a cost of just $1. Staff say the land value is approximately $2 million. The importance of this project was noted by several councillors. Ward 6 councillor Paul Singh considers it a momentous moment as the city is really doing something about affordable housing.
I think this is a phenomenal day for us as a community. I think far too often we continue on parroting the whole aspect of affordable housing, housing supply, shortage and all. This is actually a momentous moment where we're doing something about it. We have assets, we have land, and we have the ability to create these opportunities. And now because of that partnership with the region, with the YWC and the higher orders of government, we're creating 41 supportive housing units. Kudos to everyone.
Mayor Barry Verbanovic is excited about the project as it really is the first concrete action coming from Kitchener's affordable housing strategy.
I will just say how pleased I am that we are taking this step. It's one of the first steps coming out of our housing strategy, as well as our Make It Kitchener 2.0 strategy. But I think more importantly, you know, when we think about it, you know, women are the group that have been most impacted during the COVID-19 pandemic, and the partnership with the YW in order to support this this project and this initiative to supply supportive housing to single women is really exciting from my perspective. But more importantly, I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the federal government, who has responded to calls from municipalities in terms of making investments through the Rapid Housing Initiative. And it's certainly our hope that we will see additional funds being made available through RHI so that we can get more modular homes and so on built to meet some of the demand in our communities.
As is often noted by lower tier municipal governments, housing is not the mandate of cities. Yet, many cities are looking at ways they can play a role. As the mayor mentioned, any significant work on affordable housing will need the support, especially in funding, from upper levels of government. This project is being funded through the federal government's Rapid Housing Initiative. Elizabeth Clark said these kinds of partnerships between various levels of government allows the project to happen quicker. Also, these will be modular homes that are pre-made and then assembled on-site, also resulting in faster completion. Clark said that these partnerships have made the project affordable for the YWCA. Councillor Davey concludes this discussion by saying that he's glad to see we're putting our money where our mouth is.
Yeah, thank you. I'd just add quickly as well that I'm really happy this is here. Lower tier municipalities are not directly responsible for affordable housing, and here we are committing to staff's estimate at least $2 million, putting our money where our mouth is because it's the right thing to do in this situation. So I think it is important. I think it was a good, actually a very good question by Councillor Grazola to put a price tag on how much we are supporting this issue that's so badly needed in our community.
We'll still stick with housing, but let's move to the regional level now. Regional Council recently discussed the proposal for 555 Beechwood Drive in Waterloo. They announced that Southside Construction will be awarded the surplus land on Beechwood Drive to build a residential development that includes an estimated 50 affordable housing units. This approach of providing surplus land in exchange for affordable housing is new for the region. Several councillors referred to this as a pilot approach to see what works well and what doesn't. Councillor Jim Erb, representing Waterloo, says that we need to see these pilots as learning opportunities.
The good news is the new affordable housing units we're going to get. However, I hope it's equally important to keep in mind that we have planned this development and the Bechtel Street project in Cambridge, and it has continued to engage with the neighborhood. We need to maintain an open mind to these pilot projects and see them as learning opportunities that will inform us going forward with other developments, and that we're willing to accept input from the community on how we might develop future projects.
Councillor Tom Galloway, representing Kitchener, agrees. He is hopeful that as more projects are completed, there will be opportunities for more affordable housing options in each proposal, as well as increased subsidies to offer not just affordable options, but deeply affordable housing.
I think it's a really good project, but I'm hoping, because it's a pilot, some of the learnings from this is going to be like, how many units can we expect in future similar types of developments that would be affordable? Could it be a higher proportion than the number in this particular building, and the level of subsidies, could they be deeper? So I'm hoping that the report that will come out, I'm sure at some point in time as a result of this pilot, will be able to address those questions, so that if we do go out again with a similarly based type project, that we might be able to push the envelope a little bit or a lot, depending on its success in terms of the number of market units vis-a-vis subsidize or affordable units.
Following up on those points, Mayor Verbanovic looks forward to ensuring that the region partners with the not-for-profit sector too.
I do want to somewhat echo Councillor Galloway's comments. I personally would like to see us work as much as possible with the not-for-profit sector. I think there is a place for the private sector in these, but I also think that we need to explore how we can maximize the opportunities in terms of length of time, as well as the number of units overall going forward. And so I welcome that discussion with, you know, a report from staff as we look at future opportunities.
Councillor Clark notes that the size of this proposal likely presented challenges for many nonprofit builders who tend to build on smaller scales.
I think that we did want to test out ways to involve different partners, including the for-profit, and I think that that's an important part of the work we're doing. I suggest, though, that this particular project, because it did have a requirement for very high density, was probably prohibitively expensive for the not-for-profits to participate in. And I say that as a not-for-profit provider. I think that smaller projects that maybe don't require in excess of 100 units would have more response from the not-for-profit sector.
While Kitchener's mayor understands that, he wants to be intentional about removing barriers for nonprofits.
Certainly, I did have some feedback from the not-for-profits around our proposal and some of the challenges that it presented. And so I think part of that review, at least what I'll be looking for, is our engagement with that sector to see what were the challenges with the call as we presented it this time, and what are the changes that would be necessary to get them engaged in the future.
Lastly, from the region, we heard that even though the region of Waterloo lost approximately $30 million in revenues last year due to the pandemic, it actually ended the year with a surplus of just over $4 million. Waterloo Regional Police ended the year with a $3.2 million surplus. According to the Waterloo Region Record, the region's surplus is largely due to funding from upper levels of government to the tune of just over $35 million. The region also saved money through cost-saving measures such as temporary and permanent staff layoffs, in addition to cutting travel, conference, and training costs. Now let's head over to Waterloo, where Mayor Dave Jaworski opened the meetings with comments in response to the attack in Atlanta that left 8 people killed, 6 of whom were Asian women. Here are the mayor's comments.
Last week in Atlanta, a despicable, misogynistic, and hate-filled racist attack occurred that saw 8 innocent lives lost, 6 of which were Asian American women. There are no words strong enough to condemn such a horrific and senseless act. On behalf of my fellow council members and the residents of the city of Waterloo, I offer our sincere condolences to the families and friends who are grieving the loss of their loved ones. As a community and organization, we condemn all forms of violence. We are united in our stand against racism and hatred. As a city, we are committed to creating change and to anti-racism initiatives, in part by embedding diversity, equity, and inclusion knowledge and staff experts in our organization. Around the world, including in Canada, people with Asian backgrounds have been increasingly subjected to racial slurs and violence since the start of the pandemic. Sadly, women also continue to be victimized by these cowardice acts. Together, we can and must stop the violence and the hatred.
Staff then shared the first progress report related to the diversity, equity, and inclusion work the city has undertaken since administering a diversity census and inclusion survey of its workforce in 2019. The response rate was 70%, 427 people responded of the 611 city employees. The census survey provided information on demographic composition, representativeness, both compared to the community and across the city's employees, and employee inclusion experience. Staff shared some of the survey's findings.
When we compare the organization to the community using the CMA census data, racialized persons and women are less represented. In higher pay bands, that is greater than $90,000 per year, when compared to their overall workforce representation, women, persons with a disability, and racialized persons are less represented. In addition, women were found to be less represented in management when compared to their overall workforce representation at City of Waterloo.
This data was used to identify next possible steps.
It was time to develop a strategy, and the city's internal diversity, equity, and inclusion implementation plan was created. The plan used CCDI's 8 recommendations and 20 strategies as the framework for the way forward. A new corporate structure was created and populated to carry out the work of implementation. More than 40 staff from across the organization have come forward to join these working groups and actively participate in the work of implementation.
65% of the recommended actions have been either initiated or completed. Staff outline what some of those actions are.
Some highlights of the work to date include a recognition day program that provides informal learning opportunities related to celebrations and observances, including Black History Month, Tri-Pride, National Indigenous Peoples Day, International Day of Persons with Disabilities, and many others. Training is taking place with a focus on foundational aspects of DEI, and there has been a very high level of interest in these courses, which again, I think speaks to the level of engagement and interest among staff to move this work forward. And 2 significantly revamped corporate policies and procedures have been launched, the Corporate Human Rights Accommodation Request Procedure and the Corporate Respectful Workplace Policy and Program.
Staff noted that there is still more work to be done, and that includes hiring an Indigenous Initiatives, Anti-Racism, Accessibility and Equity team, and administering a follow-up census survey to gauge progress and assess change.
While some good work has been done, we know there's a lot more to do. DEI working groups will continue to support the work of implementation. The new Indigenous Initiatives, Anti-Racism, Accessibility and Equity team will be hired. We'll continue to build a training program, and we will administer a follow-up census survey in the next 2 to 3 years, the timing of which will align with other strategic processes.
And that concludes this episode of the Weekly Roundup, a program that is part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can find out more about that initiative, as well as all of the CKMS programming at Radio Waterloo. Also, feel free to continue this conversation. You can always find me on Twitter at M2Bowman. Thanks for listening.